Welcome to the Tim Fowler Show, where production is paramount and we discuss the tools, time, and people associated with getting jobs done and making a profit. On today's episode of the Tim Fowler Show, we will be talking about production in a large remodeling firm with the help of special guest Bruce Case of Case Design Remodeling in Washington, D.C. Alongside Tim Fowler, I'm your co-host Steve Wheeler. Here is the Tim Fowler Show.
Hey everyone, I'm Tim Fowler and welcome to the Tim Fowler Show. Keep those ideas coming in. If you have thoughts, we're doing a lot of podcasts on your ideas, so send them in to me at tim@remodelersadvantage.com. As most of you know, when I really got into remodeling, it was with a company right outside of Washington, D.C. called Hopkins & Porter. And I went to work for them as a lead carpenter to start with, and then eventually I became their production manager. And as I got more into the business, I kept hearing about some other company in town called Case Design. And it was kind of interesting because at a lot of meetings, we'd be talking about this and that, and someone would say, well, Case is doing this or Case is doing that. And then somebody else would say something like, well, we're not Case. And so then we would move on and maybe find a solution to what we were challenged with at the time. Of course, back in those days, a lot of business owners hung out together through NARI and other organizations. And so my bosses were all good friends with Fred Case and Linda Case and Mark Richardson, who was primarily involved in sales, I think, at the time. Mark eventually became president of the company, and now Bruce Case has taken the reins at the company. And from what I've seen, I've been in their office many times and been able to interact with their team. And it just seems like a great place to be. And so I thought it'd be a lot of fun to have Bruce on. He will be our keynote speaker at our production conference in Orlando on September 26th. And I just thought it'd be a lot of fun to have him on and just ask him some questions about growing up around this company, but also what's it like with a big company? So many of us are involved in companies that are in the $2 to $5 to $8 million range, and production is handled in a way that fits those companies. But what's it like? And also too, like, how do you develop a team when you've got, you know, 60, 70, I don't even know how many people working with you. So let's just jump right into it.
Absolutely. Let's get started. So Bruce Case is the president and CEO of Case Design Remodeling, one of the largest full service remodeling firms in the nation. Operations are focused in the Washington, D.C. area and bring clients a unique mix of design build services through the Case brand, as well as home care services through Fred, the first name in home repair. Case has extended its reach across the U.S. through a network of licensees and franchisees. Since its founding in 1961, Case has won over 100 national design, remodeling, and business awards, and the Case Network has completed over 100,000 renovation projects for over 60,000 clients. Binding these initiatives is a focus on inspiring team members and clients. Welcome to the show, Bruce.
I'm excited to be here. Thanks, gentlemen.
Hey, this is really fantastic. So before we get into all the nitty-gritty about production, just give us a little bit of a look at Case. The intro told us quite a bit, but I'm kind of interested in what's your structure, I guess, and particularly as it relates to production.
We've got about 170 employees. About half are production in the field, project managers, field support, and then the other half are more office. I'm including the sales, design teams, accounting, technology, those kind of teams. And in the world of production, on the Case Design side, the larger projects, an average job size of about 120,000, we have 8 project managers that each run 5 or 6 lead carpenters on their teams. And then on the Fred side, which is the smaller projects, maybe a $10,000 to $11,000 average job size, that's more of a true lead carpenter concept.
Wow. Okay. So that's a lot of people to be looking over and managing. So let's just jump right into it. I know you grew up around this business, and I guess I just wanted to get a little idea from you personally. Is this something you always wanted to do, was to take over as president of Case Design, or is it something that you kind of grew into as you get a little older?
Yeah, I love the craft since I can remember. I mean, I was always helping my dad around the house. I was one of those people sort of side handed him the tools as he went. And then I started working in the business, I think, when I was 12, which might be illegal. I don't know, but in the summer. but I got to an age, I still loved it. It's just, I wanted to have my own experience.
Okay.
So I went and worked in insurance brokerage. So a little bit of a different world for a while outside of Boston. And after I did that for a little while, I wanted, the opportunity at Case, partly in terms of just what Case does, is truly a passion of mine in terms of remodeling and, bringing people's homes to life, but also the opportunity to direct a business, to have more say. But before I got involved, my dad and I sat down and had a lot of conversations. We had some certain deals that we had made on both sides, things that were important to him and to me, which I think worked for us. And I might help with some other people too. And I knew I wouldn't be president for 10 or 11, 12 years,
Okay.
I had to put my dues in.
Did you actually work in every department in the business? I thought I heard that at one point, to kind of get your feet wet and know what everybody was up against.
Most departments, yeah, not all. I do not have a background, or have not worked in the design side of things.
Okay.
And then accounting and IT. Those, I don't think anybody wants me working in those. But on pretty much all the other areas, I think so, yeah.
Wow. So I guess one of my questions is, having done that, having been in the field, having been a project manager, what are some of the lessons you learned from that enables you to be a better manager for the company as a whole?
Well, first of all, I hope I'm a decent manager. We got to put some of our team members on, right?
But yeah, we might do that.
That's fair. I think it did for me was that really gave me an increased level of empathy and respect for what different people do and their different roles and the challenges that might come up. When you actually do something, as you guys know, and you're on the front lines with it, it gives you a whole different level of appreciation with it. And then I'd say another thing that it's done for me is it's helped given me a bigger perspective of the business and workflows and how interdepartmental issues are so critical, and how if design doesn't do their thing, it messes up in production. If production doesn't do their thing, it messes up sales or design or other areas. So it helps me when something comes up to at least, I think, try to think about globally, how does it flow through the different teams.
So does it help you a little bit with the mediation, where you have two different departments that are kind of fussing about something, and you can more intelligently talk about what the challenges are with each department?
Yeah, definitely. And that never happens in Case, as you can imagine. Everything is honky-dory, but no, it does. It does.
And, yeah.
And honestly, sometimes it might be a specific insight that since I'd worked in that role, but bigger picture, it's that, again, respect and empathy. So I understand both parties are coming with their perspective, and true to their perspective, it's just working it through. It's not one party trying to be difficult.
Right. That's usually the case. And usually where the problem occurs is where one side feels like the other one is just trying to take advantage of them in some way. And if you can mitigate that, it really works out well. So just from your view, so you're at the 30,000 view or the 40,000 foot view of your company. What are some of the things that you think have contributed to the production success? This is mostly about production. So from a production side, just in general, what do you think has contributed the most to the success of the company in that side?
By far, and this might be sort of a cliche, but it's definitely the truth. By far, number one, I put, is our people. Whether that's the culture, inspiring them through growth and opportunity, the way we've tried to structure our teams so that production is equal with, not consistent to sales. And I see that not in a lot, but modelers. So people, number one, that sort of respect that I talked about is something we really rely on. We can certainly disagree. Everyone has a bad day. There's all those types of things, but again, when we just disagree, we just need to do it respectfully. So, and then the other thing I'd throw out when you ask that question that comes to mind is processes. We've been doing this since 1961, and in some ways that's a real advantage with processes because they're pretty evolved, but in some ways it's a disadvantage because I think, you know, we're in a world of change, and a lot's going on. We need to be nimble. But whether that's processes that tie accountability with empowerment for production in particularly, but, you know, all groups. But a lot of times I'll see remodelers who want to hold their project managers or lead carpenters accountable for GP or for client experience, but yet they don't empower them to hire their own teams, or they don't empower them to approve the sale before it's made.
So one of my questions that comes, you know, from that comment is, as such a big company, how do you actually change something? You know, it just strikes me that once something is ingrained as sort of doctrine within a company, it is really hard to get, you know, 20 people to change and do it differently, much less 80 people. So what's the process that you guys use for actually developing processes within the business?
That's a great question. I guess to me, there's two types of change. One type is more of a procedural change, you know, like when the lead paint, the RP came out, for instance, right, as a real world example. That was a change for all of us. But we have certain gates in our processes that it can't go past that gate until we get the right forms, the right processes are followed. It's sort of a check and balance. And then once that's good, so like with RP, we just said it can't go past this gate until we get the right forms and do the right, you know, processes. That's one type of change. Those are fairly easy. You know, we educate the team, we tell them, and the gates just won't let it go until it happens. But the other type of change to me is more difficult, is more of a deeper shift in terms of, like, for instance, communication with clients, you know,
right,
and how we communicate with clients. We all know that's changed. And that's
right,
more of a decentralized, we've got to rely on our teams to do that. And that's something that, you know, we educate. What we find is roughly a third will jump on the bandwagon, be excited, understand it. A third says, no way, heck no, I'm never going to do that. And the third's in the middle. So it's just a matter of continuing to work. And it can take, I know this might sound ridiculous, but it can take 6 months sometimes to truly, truly get something implemented, you know, at a high level.
So you'd say to somebody listening into this that you got to work at it for at least 6 months to make some of these things take place.
Absolutely. Unless it's, again, one of those relatively simple procedural things, you know, that you can use forms and checklists for.
Yeah. So your people. So I know you have a lot of good people, and I know you guys have worked really hard at hiring good people. Any, like, key to that you would throw out to say something that you guys have done that has just helped you get the right people in the right places?
I would say the biggest one is growth from within. And if I could just expand on that for a minute,
sure.
You know, a lot of people are probably thinking that obvious, you know, promote from within, whether it's a helper into overtime, a carpenter, a lead carpenter, or a project manager. But we've really tried to do that more proactively. And certainly we've always promoted from within, but now we've got professional development trainings, that we've developed so that, for instance, if you're a helper and you don't know anything about the craft and you want to get into the craft, and you can start as a helper with us, and if you show good things, then we'll put you as an apprentice on a team, and then we'll have you work with true lead carpenters, but in addition, we'll supplement that with professional development, where once a month, usually from 7 to 8 a.m. as an example, you'll come in and you'll actually do hands-on electric 101, plumbing 101, how to deal with inspectors. You'll do the soft skills, like how to deal with a homeowner, how to deal with a tricky negotiation situation. And so our goal is that maybe that can, you and I know it takes real world experience, for instance, to be a lead carpenter, but
right,
we can supplement it with some other things. We also, you know, on top of the classroom and the hands-on training, we also reimburse up to $500 a year for people for, it's called professional development, that maybe they want to take a class at a community college or do some other things like that. So, and we have those going on, not just for carpentry, but also for people who want to be project managers. Let's say you're a seasoned carpenter, you want to see what it's like to be a project manager, you want to learn a little bit. We have that for that. We have it for sales also. So, a couple of goals.
So I'm going to front load this question a little bit because it's something that I believe in. But do you find that just spending a little bit of extra time training people helps you keep them on your team? That seems to have been the thing for me from many different companies, is that the more you put into people, the more likely they are to stay and to be what you want them to be.
Yeah, 110%, absolutely. Okay. It certainly makes them better, but as you're saying, I think it inspires them. It makes them feel like they're part of the company more deeply. But the third thing I'd say to your point about the return on investment for training is it helps us hire people. Because when we can hire somebody, again, let me use that example of somebody who wants to trade, is relatively young. You know, we talk about this a lot in our industry, that we need to inspire more people in our industry, but part of it is training them. I mean, if we get a whole bunch of people who don't know which end of a hammer to hold, but they're hard workers, that's great, but it's hard. But this has allowed us to attract a lot of really good, stereotypically younger people who want to and show them a path. So it's helped in that area, too.
Wow, that's a whole nother podcast, I think, for us, a road to go down there. But so I mentioned in the introduction that you'll be the keynote speaker at our production conference. And the main point of the production conference and the summit, the Remodelers Advantage Summit, is on team building. And so I'm just kind of curious, you know, with such a large company, how do you keep the team atmosphere? And so again, let me just preface it a little bit by saying, when I interact with smaller companies, they struggle with a real team, because they bring in one new person and it just changes the team dramatically, and they don't always adjust. And so that person feels left out. They feel like they're not really part of the team, or it's very lucky that they become part of the team. So I'm just kind of curious. And again, in my head, I'm thinking like 75, 80 people in production, and then 100 and something, 60 or so in the whole company. What do you do that helps with the team aspect of CASE?
Yeah. Well, just let me start by, you know, a little truth and honesty. The reality is that's a challenge, you know. I mean, it's a constant. And if I looked at my day and the amount of time I spend on this issue, I call it culture, but team, you know, those types of things, it's got to be 40% of my time. And it's not always putting out fires, or there's not fisticuffs. I'm not saying that. But the reality is there's push and pull and different perspectives, and that's what makes us great, but that causes disagreements sometimes. And so just to put that out there. But in terms of what we do to try to help with that, one is, again, it's a huge focus of mine, and leadership, is to try to work well together. And I think a big first step in that is the leaders of different divisions have to work well and respect each other. It starts there, because if the head of production, for instance, doesn't respect or work well with the head of sales or design, it's going to trickle through the team. So that's one thing I would say. Another thing I would say is when we bring on a new person, you mentioned that as an example, that changes the dynamic of the team, is we do onboarding. So we spend a couple days, regardless of what role you're in the field, in the office, you're answering the phone at the reception desk, you spend a couple days getting oriented. And usually we'll do one day, it's more HR and forms and get to know some things, but then we'll have you back in 30 days to meet with me and other people to really try to give you the big picture as best we can. And obviously also put you with a mentor for the first, depends on the role, 2 to 4 weeks. And we also give you a job description. So we're trying to, we found new people want to be micromanaged. I know a lot of people listening might cringe at that. I hate being micromanaged. I know, Tim, I know you well enough to know you wouldn't do that either. But the reality is, if you were brand new on a job, if, let's say you were a new astronaut, and you climbed in the space shuttle, you would kind of want to be micromanaged, I think. Got it. I would, too. And I think a lot of us lose sight of that, that we don't want to be micromanaged. So when we hire someone new, we kind of are hands off. Those people, I really feel, want to be told what to do, color by numbers, for a while. And then, sure, once they start getting their feet under it, they don't want it. So.
Yeah, I think that's a fantastic observation. And, again, using that illustration of getting into something brand new, you know what? I always go like, show me what you want me to do, right? Don't just tell me to do it, but show me what you want me to do. I also want to emphasize that you said roughly 40% of your time. And I just think that's such a key thing right now with companies, to focus on the team and the culture and that sort of thing versus the other things that pull our time.
Right. And it's so easy to get drawn into those other things, isn't it? It's just the squeaky wheel, you know?
So, Bruce, you mentioned earlier about the gates, and I really would love to hear more about that and expound. I assume that's basically where the handoff is and where things stop and start in the process. So maybe just expound a bit on the gates or that system.
Yeah, and that's right, Tim. Big picture, it's at those joints where we feel like that's where we're our weakest, is where the cartilage and the joints are. those of us getting older know that's where the weakness is. But anyway, so yeah, an example would be when a client signs a contract. That's a gate in the sense that, you know, there's a commitment from us to the client there, and obviously the client to us. But also then production is getting much, much more involved. So before we sign a contract with a client, there's a number of things that need to be done. We need to review the contract, make sure it's the right form. We want to make sure the project manager has reviewed, and in our world, production approves the sale before it's made. So before it's presented, they review it and approve it. Our estimator looks at it. Yeah, those are a lot of steps. Yeah, it slows things down sometimes, but you might be slowing the project down maybe by a week, which to us, that's worth it if it allows for us to have success on the back end with the client, but also with our team. So then the project manager, when they actually are getting to build the job, they've already reviewed it, they've seen it, they've done a walkthrough, is certainly part of our process. But also we make sure then once the sale's made, another gate is we make sure all the right contract forms, like the RP and the right of rescission and all these things that we all, that's another gate. Another gate is at the start of the project, we do a pre-construction walkthrough, we make sure we get the form back, we have a specific form we go through to make sure we hit everything. Another gate is mid-job huddle, so at the middle of a job. And it doesn't have to be the literal middle of the job, but around the middle.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of halftime. Let's go through that. Again, we use a form as a way to make sure, as a gate, that that's happening. When the job's finished, that's another gate. So you can tell there's probably, on a case design, $120,000 job, there's probably 8 to 10, maybe gates.
Very cool.
It sounds like a lot, but I feel like it helps us.
Yeah. So I'm sitting here just with the visual of somebody, I don't know, maybe has to make it to the bathroom really fast. And that key card that they keep putting in the hotel door won't let them in the door because it's not it's not complete, you know. And when it finally connects, when everything is finally right, it lets you in and you can go about the rest of your business, so to speak. So I
and
think
that,
there's
that,
a – go ahead.
Sure.
Go ahead.
I was going to say that's a perfect example because most of the time the key card works. I mean, we're not intentionally holding. If somebody just does everything the way we've asked them to and follows the checklist, done. They just go right into the room and use the bathroom. But if, you know, those exceptions, and these are brand promise level issues. I mean, these aren't, they used a blue pen and not a black pen.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's so cool. So one of the big challenges with people in companies, and I suspect it gets worse as you get bigger and bigger, is just the idea that I've got a great idea. I've got an idea that I think will help case design get better and better and better, but I'm afraid to put it out there, or I have trouble putting it out there. What would you say to somebody like a project manager or a lead carpenter working for a company that thinks they really can help things grow, but they feel like there might be some resistance from the owner of the company? What would you tell them in terms of helping them to push forward?
I guess my encouragement would be to say, I think all of us want to work at a company that wants to get better and that will at least listen to ideas to improve. The company may or may not do it, right? And if at some point somebody listening is working at a company that truly will not listen or will almost be frustrated if they bring forward this idea in a constructive way, then that's probably not the greatest company for the person listening to work at anyway. So I guess, said in reverse, I'd say bring your idea forward, bring it forward constructively, not in the heat of a moment or a frustrating situation.
Right.
Put thought into how you want to present it. To me, it's presented in the fashion of here's a challenge. An opportunity, and then here's the solution. Think great. Be willing to pilot it. I would be willing to help be part of the solution. And if the response, I think you should go in thinking it's going to be positive. And if it's not, then again, as I said a minute ago, I think that's an opportunity to really think about what you're doing in your role, and maybe even talk. I tend to be pretty straightforward. Even talk to your supervisor and said, you know, I brought this idea to you a week ago, and I put a lot of thought into it. And you just didn't even want to hear it. Can you help me understand? Because I'm just trying to help the company. But again, your lab, maybe that's not realistic. Maybe I'm idealistic.
Oh, that's really great. So as we're starting to wind this down, Bruce, maybe I think the last thing I wanted to talk to you about was, is there anything that you guys have done at Case that you kind of look at and go, if we had just done this a little bit sooner, it would have it would have helped us that much further ahead of where we are. I guess I'm just kind of looking for that golden nugget that you go like, yep, if we'd have done that, you know, X, Y, or Z, we wouldn't have had these problems. Anything like that that you can share with us?
Do you have a couple days for the call? Or our time limit here? Anything that improves things, honestly, I look back and say, geez, we should have done that earlier. I'd say one of the top ones, the real lesson learned for me was I think people have a really amazing top performer in terms of results. Somebody, a top sales person who sells the most and just is consistent and you can rely on them, or a top project manager, a top lead carpenter. But yet, once in a while, we get that person, but in that same body is a disrespectful, very individualistic, not a team player kind of personality. Unfortunately, they're great performers right. In terms of results, but they can tear apart team, tear apart culture. And those people, for us at least, and I think a lot of people listening, can just, it's amazing what damage they can cause. So the lesson learned was, you know, in terms of what we could have done sooner, to your question, is the job quickly to try to improve them. And if they can't improve, we've got to have them find another job. And it's hard to do. Top performance, but it is unbelievable. Think of a basketball team, and you get a top performer that tears up culture but scores a lot of points. I'd rather get that person off the team and let everyone else flourish and win as a team rather than as an individual. So that's a lesson learned for me.
That's fantastic. Bruce, I really appreciate you taking some time to be with us on the show today. Fantastic information.
Thank you very much, and thank you for the opportunity.
Thanks so much, Bruce. Take care.
All right, gentlemen. Take care.
Tim, that was an awesome show, as expected. I love talking to Bruce Case every single time I walk away, just knowing a little bit more and feeling good. He's an inspiring guy. I love talking to him.
Definitely. I think a couple of really cool personality things about him. He's very humble. He's sitting on top of one of the best remodeling companies in the country and is very, very humble about, you know, where he sits and how he sits there and so forth like that. There are just some great things. I think the thing about people, and I know we're all struggling with this out in the world there, but what I'll say on top of what Bruce said is get the training that you need to develop your people, because that's going to be key. You can't just go through them like a grist mill. You have to work with people and train people. This came up two or three times in that process, and I mentioned it during the conversation, but just the fact that he thinks he spends about 40% of his time trying to develop his people or working on team or culture. Now, obviously, it's a big company. He has that opportunity because he's not out there selling. But for business owners that are just, I don't know how you say it, just bent on selling everything right now, they need to stop and think about what kind of time are they putting into the management of the people, the development of the people.
Well, that's really what true growth is, And I've thoroughly enjoyed his gates, you know, that tangible way of, you know, saying this is the handoff, not a handoff. You know, it's the company, you know, it hits a gate and that's how you open it. And don't open the gate unless things are checked, because like he said, if it takes an extra week, but you imagine the stress, emotional, financial, everything that can get caused if you don't have the key right on that gate, it's a no-brainer. I love that part.
Well, as you know, Steve, I speak to production people all over the country and in lots of different environments, and you can bet that that's going to become part of my vocabulary, because again, it is a hugely visible, a visual that, you know, and forget what we said during the podcast, but I can just envision myself running up against a gate that's closed and locked until I have the right key. Mm-hmm. And you know what? If the gate is open, I will walk through it even if I don't have the key, right? Yeah. And I think that's really a huge visual for people that came out of this podcast.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, once again, we would like to thank Bruce Case for joining us. And we want to thank you especially for listening to another episode of The Tim Fowler Show.
And remember, Tim Fowler Show, we're working hard to eliminate it is what it is from your vocabulary.
This has been another episode of The Tim Fowler Show. Want to hire Tim and fast track your growth? Visit remodelersadvantage.com/consulting to learn more. And if you'd like more information about roundtables, our world-class peer advisory program, please send me an email at steve@remodelersadvantage.com. And of course, don't forget to subscribe to the show and comment on iTunes. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.